Tonight's topic is called What Halacha Expects When You Are Expecting. You probably get the title. Most people actually have the book. We actually do not have the book at home for some weird reason, but apparently it's like the Bible for these types of things. Or more appropriately, there are two very fine halachic books. In English, there's a book called Halachas of Pregnancy and Childbirth. Now, when I say very fine, you have to take it with a grain of salt. This book is interesting. You have to be careful looking up the sources. He often misquotes where things are, but it's a nice book. It's user-friendly. It's accessible. This is the real classic. It's called the Torah HaYoledes. It's written by Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein in Hebrew. He has weird stuff also. Everyone who writes on this topic tends to have some weird things, but most of his sources are actually very good, and it's a well-organized book in Hebrew on this topic. We're going to divide tonight's shiur into a few different topics. I want to first speak about, and you could see it on the sheets, induced labor. Okay, the question is it permitted to be induced? My wife has a friend, okay? Most people's wives have friends. My wife has a friend whose sister decided to be induced the day of my wife's friend's wedding. Got that? They are not speaking anymore. Now, she went to the chuppah, and after the chuppah, she went into the hospital to be induced. The reason why this was done was because of a very important matter. There are source sheets around. The reason why this was done was because the doctor was going on a vacation. And sometimes doctors go on vacations and people want their doctor, so they, the doctor says, oh, what's the big deal? You're in the 9th month already, let's induce you. So, from the halachic perspective, what's the status of induced labor? So I give you here a tshuva in Igros Moshe. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, "Be'inyan hakdamas leida ayidei tachbulos," when it comes to inducing labor, basically, inducing labor involves that they give you a shot of this thing called Pitocin. Word to the wise, Pitocin is awful. It is, anyone who has ever experienced labor without Pitocin and labor with Pitocin will tell you that labor with Pitocin is just a dreadful experience. Labor is not a fun experience at all, okay? I'm not going to sugarcoat it, but labor with Pitocin is like a kal vachomer, that it is really dreadful. That's, if you'd ask me, that's why I would tell you not to induce labor. Because induced labor, again, obviously, okay, it's not babi cheshbon. If there are medical reasons to induce, you induce. The doctor tells you, you have to induce labor, there's something that is wrong. I think my wife was induced in three out of five cases. Two of the cases, the water broke very early, and they don't want you to go 24 hours without with broken water, without going into labor. So they induce you for that reason. Rav Moshe Feinstein feels, this is a tshuva that's written to Rabbi Shmuel Tuvia Stern of Miami Beach. He actually was the Rav HaMachshir of Hebrew National, for those who are keeping score. But in Rav Moshe's tshuva, he says that you should not induce labor. His reasoning goes as follows. He says, "Lefi ani yesdaiti, yesh tam yoser bar la'asar, deleida bezman kederach hanoshim lo nechshal l'sakana klal." Rav Moshe has a very interesting idea. Rav Moshe says, you know what? When you deliver a baby at the right and proper time, so that's not dangerous at all. So Rav Moshe is saying something, that labor is not dangerous. And therefore, if you're going to go into labor when you're supposed to, so God will protect you. But if you're going to speed up the process because the doctor has a golf game or the like, so Rav Moshe says, in that situation, you're entering a dangerous situation when you don't have to. It's strange, no? So that's strange. Rav Moshe is assuming that delivering a baby at the normal time is not dangerous at all. No, don't we bench gomel after you have a baby? Right, we assume that it really is dangerous. We're Mechalel Shabbos. right, when someone is in the throes of labor, it's a cholashi yesh bo sakana. Rav Moshe is saying something that is very difficult, and the later Svarim point out that Rav Moshe is saying is difficult. The real reasons not to induce labor are referred to earlier in this tshuva by Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe says don't induce because, first of all, it's good for the baby to be inside. Babies continue to grow. Every additional day of growth in the womb can be productive. Moreover, the fact is, there is a sakana in giving birth, but why have the sakana earlier if it's unnecessary? Right? If God is going to put you in the sakana at a certain time a few weeks from now, why speed up that process? There's no mitzvah to be in sakana earlier. So as a result, Rav Moshe feels that you should not induce for convenience. Besides the fact that it's bad for family relations, like we mentioned earlier, but inducing for convenience is halachically a problem, according to Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe is a little bit strange in his reasoning, but others say the reasons that we mentioned later, if you look in Rav Moshe Sternbach's Tshuvas and Chelak Aleph Siman Tov Tov Tzadi Dalet, he assumes this way, etc. Rabbi Yashiv is quoted as saying that you should not induce for convenience sake based on the Mishnah Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, Bal karchacha ata chai, bal karchacha ata nola, that you're born against your will. And what does that mean, that you're born against your will? That means that you shouldn't induce labor. That's what Rabbi Yashiv says. So again, what does it mean? I think this means that for convenience, you should not induce labor. Now, the question that the Torah's Hayoledus addresses is, let's say I'm not inducing completely for convenience. Let's say I'm inducing because the one particular doctor who is expert in my type of delivery is going to be on vacation. Oh, so that's a different cheshbon. In that situation, so the Torah's Hayoledus is written by Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein. He's Rev Elyashiv's son-in-law. He says that he thinks it's permitted to induce in that case. However, he says if you're going to induce only because you like a particular doctor and that doctor's going away, then he does not recommend inducing. That last point we will be able to debate in a few minutes. There's going to be one of the major concepts that comes up here is an idea called Yisuvei Daita. The fact is that the halacha recognizes the fact that we want women to be relaxed in the process of, or as relaxed as possible. It's not a relaxing process by any stretch, but we want it to be as relaxing as possible. So the idea of Yisuvei Daita probably would lead to an assumption that, you know what, if you want a particular doctor, for whatever the reason, you want this doctor. Why? You like the way she smiles. You like her skirt. I don't care what the reason is. But whatever the reason that you want this doctor, that itself is halachically significant. So even though Rav Zilberstein assumes that you should not induce just because you want your particular doctor, he says, wait until God makes you go into labor, I could hear that if you're genuinely nervous about the other partner in the practice, so then maybe that is a reason to induce to have your particular partner. So just in summary, induction of labor is something that if it's done for medical purposes, of course, but if it's done for convenience, that should be avoided. Good? Next. Okay, we are going to talk about the weird topic now called segulos. If you look in the Webster book, page 173 and onward, he gives you lots of very interesting segulos. Some of them people do for some reason. Others are not done in our communities, as far as I know. Does anyone here wear a red ruby the entire ninth month of pregnancy? If you do, please don't tell me. I think it's weird. No? They call them tekuma stones, that they are there to keep the baby inside during the ninth month. These are found in some weird Hasidish Sfarim and Sfaradi Sfarim. He has probably 30 pages of these segulas. The Chazon Ish said there's a segula to have a lot of vitamin E. I don't know. Then they have segulas that they quote, I strongly recommend not doing the segula, that women go to the mikveh during the ninth month of pregnancy. It's a very bad idea. As clean as our mikveh is, there's always a chance of infection. Why risk it? Don't do it. Right? Is that a fair statement? Some people check their mezuzahs before they are expecting before their due date, I think that's a bad idea also. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, don't check your mezuzahs. If you check your, again, if there's like a whole heebie-jeebie weird thing out there that when stuff goes wrong in life, you check your mezuzahs, right? It's like a standard, I grew up in some sort of Chabad background, so it was somewhat standard. And when things are going wrong, you check your mezuzahs. Okay, maybe. Over here, nothing is going wrong. There are plenty more seats up here. Nothing is going wrong over here. Just a question that you want to have an easy delivery, so you're going to check your mezuzahs for that. I try to follow Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach that today our mezuzahs are indoors. Odds are they are not getting ruined at all. Why are you checking them? Why are you checking your mezuzahs? If you want some segulas for an easy labor and delivery, learn Torah. Learn Torah. That's a good segula, no? Torah, the Gemara says in Shavuos, protects you. It's Megan Umatzel, right? So if you're worried, learn Torah. You say Tehillim, you go to additional Shiurim. Maybe that's why we have the Shiur tonight. I don't know. It should be some sort of Segula. But the fact is, I am not into some of these Segulas. There is one Segula that everyone does for some reason, no? The ninth month, you get Psicha. Right? And then the husband. The husband gets Psicha during the ninth month. Now, where does this come from? This comes from the Chidon, his Sefer, Mure Be'etzpa. It's found in the Webster Book, page 173. The correct way to do that segula, if you want to do it, and I don't recommend doing it, it's just, it's not really part of the Jewish tradition the way I practice it. I don't practice everything that's found in the Chidon's Svarim. I think most of us don't, no? It's just a little heebie-jeebie weird thing. About opening the Aron Kodesh. Trust me, I do not open Aron Kodesh when my wife is expecting. Baruch Hashem, I have 5 very fine children. But an anecdote is not evidence. The fact is that the correct way to do the school, according to the Chidah, is that is not just opening the Aron Kodesh, that you should daven during Baruch Shmei. When the Aron Kodesh is open, and you say, V'tashlam Rishon D'Leibai, so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should fulfill the things that I'm asking for, so the Chidah writes that what you should really say is V'tashlim Mishan D'Leibai and give your Hebrew name, V'Leibai D'Itzi and give your wife's Hebrew name, and then add in that it should be an easy labor and the child should be healthy and stuff. And by the way, you can get that segula even without opening the Aron Kodesh, right? It's quoted in the Zohar in one of the Hebe-Jebe Kabbalah books, which I'm too young to learn still. It's quoted there that the time of the Aron Kodesh is open is an Eis Ratzon to daven to Hashem. So daven to Hashem at that time, right? And it's a very beautiful segula that davening to Hashem helps. So in terms of some of these segulas, I am not really into it. There's another segula that's quoted in the postgame. They say don't do it. Some people bring Svarim into the labor and delivery room and they put them under the Yoledus's head. And some people bring a Sefer Noam Eli Melech, and it's supposed to be a wonderful thing. The minhag used to be to bring a Sefer Torah, and the poskim all scream, don't bring the Sefer Torah for this. It's not respectful for the Sefer Torah. Okay, whatever. It just doesn't seem like that's a very good idea. I recommend not doing these segulas. If anyone has a particular family practice about doing segulas, so by all means, but I'm not so crazy about it. Okay, let's talk about the real topics. Preparations for Shabbos birth. Okay, basically tonight's shiur is going to be mostly about labor and delivery on Shabbos. We will also talk about the Hilchos Nida ramifications and a few other issues where I hope we'll get to nursing issues, etc. as we go on. So now, I am 4 for 5. 4 out of my 5 children were born on Shabbos. My first son, my Baruch, my oldest son, was born Friday afternoon. My next 4 were born on Shabbos, including my last son, Yosef Dov, who was born on Shabbos Yom Kippur. So now, one of the reasons I think I have such a high batting average is because I do not do the following thing that's quoted in the Sefer Chassidim. Sefer Chassidim writes, Misha ishto meuberes vihigia chodesh hatashii yispaleo shelo teled ishto b'Shabbos. That you should daven not to give birth on Shabbos. Why? Shelo yichalalu Shabbos. You don't want to desecrate Shabbos, etc. And you should also daven on about your daughter and about your daughter-in-law, that, etc. Now, I don't do this. I happen to admit I do daven, but I try to daven for things that I consider more important. Again, I daven the baby should be healthy, that the labor and delivery should go okay, but to daven not to go into labor on Shabbos, it seems to me like we'll learn the halachos and we'll know what to do. Again, it's quoted in Sefer Hasidim, but Sefer Hasidim I don't think is a fully halachic text. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid was a very German pietist, 12th century. He was a very holy Jew. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, when he wrote Sefer Hasidim, it's a question whether he wrote it only for great tzaddikim or whether he's writing it for everybody. It might be called Sefer Hasidim for a reason, that it's not meant for everybody. It's not meant for public consumption. That, again, maybe someone who wants to daven not to go into labor on Shabbos, that's fine, but I just don't think, first of all, it's not quoted in classical poskim. That's another dead giveaway that I don't think we fully hold like it. Fine. You seem puzzled. Not yet. Fine. Okay, let's continue. Shulchan Aruch writes that a yoledes is a chola sheyesh bo sakana. A woman in labor has the halachic status of a chola sheyesh bo sakana. There are different levels of illness and ailments on Shabbos. Obviously, someone who is, it's a potentially life-threatening situation, so we desecrate Shabbos for them. And a yoledes, a woman in the throes of labor, is considered a chola sheyesh bo sakana. Umechalon aleha Shabbos l'chol ma shetzricha. We violate Shabbos whatever she needs. Korin l'chachoma, we call a midwife. In the time of Shulchan Aruch, they didn't have doctors. You call a midwife mimakom l'makom. The midwife travels from place to place. That's an important line, that you call a midwife mimakom l'makom. That means that you don't have to go to the most local person you have, or for our equivalent, to the most local hospital that you have, no? If a person feels that they would prefer delivering over the bridge in New Jersey rather than in Columbia, right? It's me mukum l'mukum. That's what the halach is. I could transport my midwife from place to place. Right? It used to be that the mountain came to Mohammed. Now we go to the mountain. But it's the same idea, right? That you don't need to go to the closest one. Miyaldin, Madlikan Haner, Afilo Hisuma. We'll talk about these dinim later on. Mikomakom b'choma sheyecholim l'shanos mishanin. Nevertheless, any shinui that you can do, you do. Meaning to say, and the Mishnah Berurah points this out clearly later on, we have this at the bottom of page 2. We give you the Gemara that tells us that we could light a candle for a yoledes, even if she's blind, right? That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. Even a blind woman in the throes of labor, you light a candle for her. Lighting a candle is an Issa D'Oraisa on Shabbos. Why do I do this? I do this, the Gemara says, I even underline it, because Isuvi Miyas V'Daita, it relaxes her. She's relaxed because she's going to say, oh, people will see me. If the lights are off, right, even though she herself can't see, but if the lights are off, so she'll be more nervous. To relax her, we do an Isur D'Oraisa of turning the lights on. That's what it says in the Gemara. That's Paskin in Shulchan Aruch. And then Shulchan Aruch says, however, that for a yoledes, kama de'efshar l'shnuyei mishanin, as much as you can possibly do a shinui, as much as you could do it in a literally backhanded way, or you could do it in an atypical fashion, that's what you have to do. The Mishnah Berurah comments on the bottom of page 2 that even according to those opinion that by regular pekuach nefesh, if somebody has a heart attack in shul, so there's a machlokas, do you try to do it b'shinui or not? It's a machlokas mechaber ramah, where the pekuach nefesh on Shabbos is hutra or dechuya. Is it completely thrown to the side, or do we assume that we try to minimize the prohibition? Even according to those opinions, that by an ordinary ill person, it is hutra, and we are mechalo Shabbos, right? Like the Rambam says, Ayidei Gedolei Yisrael, and we do it without any shinui at all. But by yoledes, you definitely need a shinui. That's what it says in the Gemara. And that is the most important point for us to remember. That any malacha that I do for a yoledes, assuming that you can do it with a shinui, and it won't delay in a way that there's potentially a problem, you have to employ a shinui, you have to do it in a backhanded sort of way. So you go to the hospital, I remember, you go to the hospital, and the hospital has a Shabbos elevator. Okay, well, if things aren't really coming quickly, so you could take the Shabbos elevator, no? Shabbos elevator starts on every floor. It could be like a scary thought, no, if you're in the Shabbos elevator. But if there is no Shabbos elevator, so what you should really do is, if a non-Jew could push the button for you, your non-Jew pushes the button. If not, you use your elbow to push the button. You try to do a shinui by yoledes. That is clear in the halacha. We try to do a shinui as much as possible. Fine. We'll talk about these halachos a little bit more as we go on, but let's continue from the bottom of page 1. Yeah. Please. It's not supposed to be a soliloquy.
Okay. So in terms of
no difference. There's no difference. Again, generally speaking, it really depends who's more nervous. That is that is just the reality in terms of making... If you're going to make a phone call, like we'll talk about in a few minutes, so you want to make sure that you're speaking in a clear way so that people understand what you're saying. If someone is extremely nervous, and people... This is a nerve-wracking experience, right? Let's be honest. So then the person who's less nervous should be making the phone call. It doesn't matter who does it. There's absolutely no preference. Absolutely no preference. Okay, now, Mishnah Berurah writes that in part because we assume that for a yoledes it is dechuya, not hutra, and we try to minimize malacha done on Shabbos, and we do everything with a shinui. So the Mishnah Berurah writes, umechalalen, lachain, min haraui, leisha shehigia lachodesh tes lahazmin, bekol erev Shabbos, kohadvarm hanitzrachim la, deshemi yizdamin leidosa beshabbos, or lotistarach chalal Shabbos. Therefore, it is proper, right, I underline the words min haraui, it's proper to prepare everything on erev Shabbos. Now, what are the things that you might need? Whatever they are. Whatever those things that you might need are, you should prepare them Erev Shabbos. Now, the Mishnah Berurah says it as a preference, as min haro'i, it's proper. He quotes it from the Sefer Chassidim. Sefer Chassidim doesn't say it as a preference. Sefer Chassidim, the next source on top of page 2, right? It's a pregnant woman when it's the 9th month. So what you should do is yatmin mayim chamin, you should insulate some hot water so that if she gives birth on Friday night, you'll have hot water. They used to have, today they have those warm incubators in the labor and delivery rooms where they put the baby right after. There was a time when they didn't have those machines, so what you had was hot water. So what you should do is you should prepare hot water before the delivery. That's what the Sefer Chassidim says. Sefer Chassidim does not say it as a preference. It sounds like a halacha, but what we mentioned beforehand, however, I think comes to bear. That everything in Sefer Chassidim is a preference. Sefer Chassidim is a book that is written for super Orthodox Jews. It's nice to aspire to be a super Orthodox Jew, but certainly not an obligation. As such, when the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Sefer Chassidim, he quotes it as min haraui, as a preference, rather than a strict obligation. This issue comes up in the following situation. When Rev Schechter, I think, has 9 children, and his wife delivered in Colombia, so he would always have his wife walk to the hospital when she's in labor. Why? Because it's close by. Why be Machal on Shabbos, right? Why have someone drive you if you could walk? Well, that requires a certain type of person who's going to walk. But then Rev Schechter goes a step further. Rav Schechter tells people that he thinks if you don't live so close to the hospital, there are some people who are not fortunate enough to live in Washington Heights. So people who live further away from a hospital, so Rav Schechter says, you know what you should do? You should really spend Shabbos with friends or relatives who live very close to the hospital so that if you can walk, you can walk. Are you obligated to do that? Right? The Mishnah Berurah says that you should prepare to minimize the amount of Chalal Shabbos. So you're obligated to spend Shabbos as close to the hospital as possible so that you can walk in theory. So Rav Shechter is super orthodox. Most people assume that you do not have to do this. No? And the reason is, first of all, Reb Usher Weiss, in his Tshuvas, the Tshuvas Minchas Usher came out this past year. So Reb Usher Weiss in Simon Chav Hei of his Tshuvas writes, and actually Reb Moshe Sternbuch in his notes at the back of this Torah HaYoledes, they have Ha'aros of Gedolei Hadora Shlita. So Reb Moshe Sternbuch in his notes in the back, he says that he doesn't think that you should try to spend Shabbos as close to the hospital as possible. He says, first of all, it's going to, in most cases, detract from your own Shabbos, no? Most people enjoy Shabbos more in their own homes than they do when they are spending time with their friends and relatives, or certainly just as a guest by people who are neither your friend nor your relative. It's probably not the most relaxing and enjoyable Shabbos. And the fact is that what's the issue? The issue is that you're worried it's going to lead to Chilul Shabbos. Am I allowed to do an activity before Shabbos that will potentially put me in the Chilul Shabbos situation later? That's a famous Gemara at the beginning of Shabbos. The Gemara speaks about Maflig and Besfina, no? The Gemara talks about boat rides at the time of the Gemara used to be very dangerous. And you knew that if you go on a boat, so you knew that you're going to potentially be Mechalel Shabbos. So that's why you shouldn't take a boat ride on Thursday and Friday, because you'll potentially be Mechalel Shabbos in that way. If it's before Thursday, or according to some poskim, before Wednesday, it's too far away from Shabbos, so then the concern doesn't apply. But everyone holds a tzorech mitzvah, you're allowed to enter a situation of potential Chilul Shabbos. Everyone holds I'm allowed to take a boat ride on a Thursday or a Friday if I'm going on the boat in order to learn in yeshiva or the like. So therefore, this case also, what am I doing? Right? I'm going to spend Shabbos in my home. I don't know for sure that I'm going to go in labor. I might. And if I go in labor, maybe I'll have to be Mechalel Shabbos. Okay, that's true. But it's Litzorech Mitzvah, because I have a mitzvah called Oneg Shabbos. I enjoy Shabbos more where I am. Almost everyone assumes that you should spend Shabbos at home. And if you have to go to the hospital, you go to the hospital on Shabbos. So far, so good? Now, okay, this next thing I do not mean seriously, although in this Sefer he takes this idea very seriously. He has an entire chapter, chapter 13, the Torah HaYoledes, discusses the very important question you've all been thinking about. How do you get to the hospital when you have to go on Shabbos? So, we'll talk about what you really do in a minute. But he discusses, is it better to go by horseback or on a bicycle? That's his very important question. So when my wife, when I told this to Rabbi Danny Rapp at one point, when my wife was like at the end of one of her pregnancies, so whenever he'd see us walking on the street, he'd say, "Hi, ho, silver away." That was, now, it's a very important Lumdisha question. I do not recommend going to the hospital either by horseback or by bicycle. Is that agreed? So, fine, thank you. Okay.
What? When was the Sefer written?
This Sefer was published in, like, I don't know, 1995? I mean, they still have horses and bicycles. It's a perfectly reasonable question.
Like that
no?
Close, actually.
They must live near Central Park. It was standing between. Oh, right, absolutely. Right. You could take one of those carriages. It could be like a very. So. The best way to go to the hospital is, we have it very easy. In Israel, it's much harder because most people are Jews. Over here, most people are non-Jews. The taxis are non-Jewish. What you should do is go to a taxi, go to a cab, and find out what it costs to go from your apartment to the hospital. Then you take that amount of money and you add a chunk to it, because the non-Jew will be helping you. We'll discuss some of the details in a minute. But you take that chunk of money and you put it in the side pocket of a bag. In the bag, you also put all of the necessary items that you will have for Shabbos. Right? You'll probably need a change of clothes in the hospital. Right? There's a chance that you'll need some grape juice and some challahs. You put that in the bag. You'll need a siddur to daven, right? Whatever you'll need, you put in the bag and you have the money on the side of the bag. In our neighborhood, we have an Eruv. Because my bag has my challahs in it, even though there's some money in the bag, my bag is not muksa. So I could take my bag downstairs, right, after I call the cab. Of course, when I call the cab, like we spoke about before, I do it with a shinoi. Meaning, I take my cell phone, and I push the buttons with my pinky, right, instead of the way I usually push the buttons. If you still have a landline, and you use a landline, so you call with a shinoi, it's best to pick the phone up from the cradle with two hands rather than one hand. Again, if you could get a non-Jew to make the call for you, that's preferred. If you happen to have a taxi stand right down the block from you and can walk over, that's also fine. But in most situations, you call the cab, no? Okay, so you call the cab, and you have in that bag, you have your challahs, so therefore the bag is not muksa. You take it downstairs. When the cab comes, you ask the cab driver to open the door for you. Because when you open the door to the cab, the lights go on. That would be a psik ratio, so the cab should open the door for you. That's perfectly legitimate. Then when you get to the hospital, most of the hospitals in...
carries the bag.
Like, what?
Carrying the bag. Like,
so carrying the bag downstairs from my apartment...
in the car.
And putting... He could put it... Right? There's an Eruv in this neighborhood, so I could put the bag in the car myself. When I get to the hospital,
there's no
Eruv on 168th, there's no Eruv on 58th Street. Is there any hospital in this area that has an Eruv around? I think in Englewood, the hospital's inside the Eruv. Mount Sinai. So if there's an Eruv where you are, great. If there's no Eruv, ask the non-Jew. First of all, you have to ask the non-Jew to open the door for you again on the way out, no? And then the non-Jew carries the bag in for you. You tell the non-Jew, by the way, your money's in the side pocket of the bag. So he's really doing it for himself. He brings the bag, if there's no way, inside the hospital for you. That's why you have a little tip for him, because he's helping you out, etc. That's the basic idea. What you are doing is you are doing Amira L'Nachri. Amira L'Nachri is absolutely permitted for a Chola. For a Chola She'en Bal Sakana is permitted. In this case, you're already a potentially a Chola She'yesh Bal Sakana. It is certainly permitted. There is no concern whatsoever. That's what you do. What can you put in the bag? So, the Minchas Yitzchak in this tshuva over here thinks that you should take the bare minimum. And he thinks that you should not take a sitter even. You should not take a tehillim. Because it's better to have the goy carry fewer things rather than more things. Most poskim disagree. First of all, it could be that there's no concern of riboy b'shu'urim on the malach of hotza'ah. The real issue over here is carrying. Right, if I'm carrying a bag, it doesn't matter if I have 10 things in the bag or 3 things in the bag. It's the same prohibition. I'm carrying a bag. That's what the Or HaSameach has. The Chafetz Chaim is less certain about this in his Sefer Nidchei Yisrael. But the basic idea is that most assume that you can take whatever might be necessary in the bag. What about taking your cell phone with you? It's Shabbos. Are you allowed to take your cell phone? It's Muksa. So I would tell my wife that I didn't think we should take the cell phone. But when Brurio was born. No, excuse me, when Rina was born. So when Rina was born, so we went to the hospital around 4 o'clock in the morning. And I was telling my wife, you know, we should not take the elevator. If you could still walk, let's walk downstairs carrying the bag. Beautiful. And she's like, you know, we really got to take the cell phone, because what's going to happen if we get downstairs and the cab isn't there? We have to call again. And that's a legitimate concern, certainly. More than that, any item that you feel you might need and it will relax you. In other words, you're going to be very uncomfortable without your cell phone. You will feel like, oh my gosh, what happens if we break down? Sometimes people have fears that are rational. Sometimes the fears are a little bit exaggerated, right? What's the likelihood that the car will break down on the highway on the way to the hospital? But if you're worried about it, it's Yisuvei Daito. We saw that Gemara before. It will relax you by having your cell phone. Take the cell phone. The Isser Muktza? Again, if the cell phone is in the bag with everything else, there's no specific Isser Muktza on it. Yeah, Miriam.
Is that only for Shabbos itself? Like, say, you'll be really panicked not having your cell phone to call your family when Shabbos ends. Is that the same?
So, Yisuvei Daita is probably, if it will help you at this point, but anything that's really getting you nervous is a halachic issue of Yisuvei Daita. Again, many poskim feel that you should try to say, you know, it's really unnecessary, there are phones in the hospital, after Shabbos you could call. By the way, I saw in the book Melachim Umnayich, which is this same Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein has a book on Amir al-Nachri specifically. He's a classic, Rabbi Zilberstein. Artscroll just translated his stuff into English for some weird reason. But he writes that he thinks you can arrange with your family the type of system that if the phone rings three times, it's a boy, four times, it's a girl. He says that that's considered Amir al-Nachri, which is done, letzorech, relaxing you. And he feels that that's permitted. It's Amir al-Nachri to do with Rabban letzorech, relaxing you. He permits it. Sometimes he has, like, strange chumras, sometimes he has strange kulas. But, okay, it's there. So, there are people who do that. Again, you shouldn't make the phone call yourself on Shabbos, obviously, but if your family really wants to know, so you can make this type of deal. That's what he assumes in that Sefer Malachim Umnayach. Yeah. So when it comes to getting to the hospital, so you should try to reduce the amount of malacha as much as possible. Yeah.
How many people are allowed to go?
Okay, so we'll talk about that right now. Based on this idea of Yesuve Daita, let's turn the page to page number 3. Is it on 3 or 4? I don't remember where I put stuff already. So, based on this idea of Yesuve Daito, Sir Rav Moshe Feinstein writes that the husband can go in the car with you to the hospital. Now, what that means is, first of all, there is no additional prohibition of, by having an extra person in the car, you're not making the motor work any harder. And you're not burning any more gas because you are sitting in the car. The cars are made in a way that, unless you weigh like 1,000 pounds, but it doesn't really make the motor work any harder. There's a certain threshold that is there. Rav Moshe says that he thinks it's best for the husband not to go with the wife to the hospital. That's the tshuva, the bottom of page 3, going over to page 4. Rav Moshe feels, in this case, there's really nothing to worry about going to the hospital by yourself. What's the big deal? Be tough, go. Right? If you're still nervous, then the husband can go with you. The Chazon Ish, who's not known for being a big makel, so the Chazon Ish in the Igros Chazon Ish, in letter Kuf Mem Aleph, in his letters, the Chazon Ish says that the husband should always go with the wife. And that's the reality today. The fact is, everybody knows that when you go to a hospital, in YU, we have a policy, and Yeshiva University has a policy, that if someone has to go to the hospital, you never go alone. It's never, okay, am I being clear? Never go to the hospital alone, right? You get much better treatment if you have someone with you. Someone can always advocate for you. It's potentially a pikuach nefesh situation in certain cases. Husbands should always go with their wife to the hospital. Now, that's the standard psak that we have in our communities. In certain very yeshivish communities, the husband does not escort the wife to the hospital. We'll discuss that a little bit later for nida reasons. But the fact is, for our purposes, a husband should always escort his wife to the hospital. Rav Moshe's slightly uncertain. By the way, this tshuva is written to Rabbi Tzvi Gertzulin, who's today the CFO of Agudas Yisrael of America. I don't know what that's worth, but that's who this tshuva is written to. Fine. The fact is that you should always escort. Now, the question of to what extent do we apply this rule of Yesuve Daita is a very big question. Let's talk about a doula. A doula, for those who don't know, I assume everyone knows, is a labor coach. The reason why people have labor coaches is it makes the labor process easier. There's also medical benefit to have it. There's a 45% lower incidence of cesarean section if you have a doula with you. Those are the numbers. Cesarean section is something we want to avoid. It is major surgery. You want to avoid a C-section at all costs. Having a doula certainly counts as Yesuve Daita. It might even be more than Yesuve Daita. The question is, what can I do to get my doula? So there is one doula in Teaneck, an Orthodox woman who got a psak from somebody, I don't know who, that she drives on Shabbos to serve as a doula. I do not recommend using her. Or you could use her, but ask her that if you go into labor, could she please take a taxi? In other words, even you yourself would not drive to the hospital on Shabbos. Driving to the hospital by yourself requires... there is serious Chilul Shabbos involved in driving a car. Every time you push that gas pedal, so the gasoline goes into the motor and you are causing more Havara d'Oraisa. Each time you push the gas pedal, there is additional Havara d'Oraisa. There are serious Isurim involved. Driving to the hospital, even if, again, if it, there's no alternative, you live in Nebraska and there are no taxis where you are, so you drive, of course. But if there are alternatives, you live in the Heights, take a cab, you don't drive. You don't drive by yourself. Even if you do drive by yourself, so there's a big machlok scene that sits Eliezer and Shlomo Zalman Arbach, when they get to the hospital, okay, great, so I got here. Am I allowed to turn my car off? Right? So it could be that's forbidden to turn the car off.
How long are you allowed to circle before you...
So you can't really circle because that's driving for no purpose. So you have to ask some non-Jew, please turn the car off for me and give the keys to me. Well, that's a little bit scary because like the non-Jew might just drive away with your car because you're asking a non-Jew to drive the car for you, no? You can't really turn the car off. That's what Rav Shlomo Zalman says, the Tzitz Eliezer. So therefore, Rav Shlomo Zalman says you should leave the car idling. The Tzitz Eliezer says he thinks that apparently if a car is left idling for a while, it can overheat and blow up. Is that true? I have no idea. Doesn't seem reasonable to me. But that's what he writes in his tshuva. Okay, so the fact is you should really not drive to the hospital by yourself. If you do drive by yourself, so in this book, he has like 20 pages telling you exactly what to do before Shabbos. You should unscrew your dome light. You should put all of your medical papers in the glove compartment. You should have only those necessary things in the car in the glove compartment, especially if you're going outside of the Tchum. If you're delivering in New Jersey, it's a question about the Tchum with the George Washington Bridge. Certainly, in those cases, you should probably have a bare minimum of stuff with you if you're going outside the Tchum. Because of that issue, but if you're delivering in the city, so that is not a concern. So do not drive yourself, go with a taxi. Fine. Let's just talk about two other points that I wanted to go through. Yeah. Can you speak louder? So, the subway is a fine way to go to the hospital. You should get a guy to swipe for you. If anything, the subway is better because there's no Amir al-Nahri. Whoever is driving the subway is doing it for most of the people who are goyim. I don't recommend taking the subway. You don't want to deliver in... You'd much rather deliver in the cab than in the subway. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I was just
I mean, it happens that, like, for the doctors and stuff in town, when they finish work this time of year, very late in the day, so I tell them to take the subway back home. They have a guy who takes their Metro card, or their one-time Metro card, swipes it for them. They get on the subway, they ride it home. Again, many people, like, finish work this time of year, let's say at 4 p.m., how do you get back for Shabbos? It's not Shabbos yet, so I could swipe the card myself even before Shabbos. I'm on the subway and etc. Yeah, so riding the subway is not a problem. There is a tshuva in the Sri De'esh. He assumes that riding a subway on Shabbos is a problem based on the same Mishnah in Beitza that says I'm not allowed to ride an animal on Shabbos because I might take a stick and hit it. So he says that applies to all forms of transportation. I've never seen someone trying to get the subway to go faster and taking a stick and hitting it, but according to the Sri De'esh, the same gezeira applies. This was a big discussion. Yeah. So it doesn't matter how she comes to you. She could drive. A Jewish doula, I think you should ask that a non-Jew drives her. You should ask her to take a taxi. Certainly this Orthodox woman who herself, it's a super cooler that she has. She drives herself and she drives back after. I find that very troubling, the fact that someone gave her this psak. I do recommend using doulas. I think if you can afford it, I think it's a very good thing.
Can you have other relatives come for...
So, again, whatever is a legitimate Yesuve Daita, to have other people... my wife, for full disclosure, uses midwives rather than doctors, so I remember the first time we went for our orientation, the midwives were telling us that someone recently delivered and they had an entire church choir came for the labor and delivery. And I don't think, like, Shabbos is a big issue for them, but, yeah, you could have more people come if it's legitimate Yesuve Daita. It's also very legitimate. Let's say you already have children, so the cab could come, take you and your kids, right, drop the kids off at whatever neighbor is going to watch them, and then take you to the hospital. Again, this is less relevant in the Heights, but in suburbia, this is more of a relevant issue. The question of to the extent of Yisuvei Daita, there seems to be a contradiction in Shulchan Aruch. In one place, Shulchan Aruch assumes that Yisuvei Daita is even Matir Yisurim De'oraisa. That's what we spoke about before, of lighting the candle for the pregnant woman. In another place, Shulchan Aruch says that Yisuvei Daita only permits Yisurim De'rabanan, like going outside of the Tchum. The Achronim all distinguish, they say that if it's something that might offer a genuine medical benefit, then we permit even a D'oraisa for Yisuvei Daita. And that would be part of the rationale why it might be permitted for this woman to drive herself, because it's a d'oraisa for Yisuvei Daita, but there's genuine medical benefit to having a doula. However, it seems to me like this is wrong, because even for the Yoledes herself, we don't want her to drive on her own. Or we don't want the husband to drive her. We try to do as much as possible with a shinui. So, also, we should try to do it with a non-Jew rather than doing it by yourself. Now, in terms of using a doula versus an epidural, again, I'm not trying to get involved in medical discussions, obviously, but when you use epidurals, you will not feel any pain, but there's a much greater likelihood of cesarean sections on forceps deliveries when you use epidurals. That's just the reality. There also is some chance, not great, but there is some chance. I know one person that the epidural actually caused her, an epidural is like a shot to the spinal cord, it actually caused her very serious complications. It is a known thing that it can happen. Again, I'm not telling you not to take epidurals, but epidural can have these complications. There is a tshuva that I give you here in the Shevet HaLevi. It's on page 4, just moving right along. The Shevet HaLevi writes that he thinks giving an epidural on Shabbos is absolutely permitted. He's talking to a Jewish doctor. You have to remember that giving a shot is potentially an Issur D'Oraisa. There are two types of shots. There's intramuscular shots and intravenous shots. No? A shot that goes into the vein involves a D'Oraisa because you have to draw a drop of blood, and you need that blood in order to get it in. A shot that goes into the muscle, we assume, is only an Issur D'Rabbanan. That is assumed by all poskim. We could elaborate on that a different time. But the fact is, does anyone know how epidurals work? Are they intravenous or intramuscular?
Neither. They're the catheter, they're put into the epidural space of this, it's basically the spinal fluid.
Right, but there is a shot that you do inject a syringe. And so that would probably be the equivalent of an intramuscular shot. In other words, if it's not going into the vein, you don't have to draw a drop of blood in order. So that would be an Issur D'Rabbanan. So an Issur D'Rabbanan, again, it will make you bleed a drop when you do it. So there is an Issur D'Rabbanan to give an epidural. But an Issur D'Rabbanan would be permitted, certainly, for relaxing pain. The Shevet HaLevi wasn't sure the type of shot that an epidural was. He says, even if it's a de'oraisa, he says, he thinks it's permitted because the post can permit someone who's in serious pain, they permit giving morphine on Shabbos. Morphine only reduces pain, no? Morphine has no medical benefit. But everybody knows that if you're in a lot of pain, the pain itself is illness. The pain itself makes you more likely to die. So, epidural he permits for that reason. Again, he also has a few statements where he is uncertain about whether an epidural is recommended, but certainly for someone who wants an epidural, it's perfectly permitted. Whether epidural is better than a doula or not, again, it doesn't have to be an either-or proposition, but that's an issue that you should think about. That's for you to decide. Okay, let's just talk about two or three more issues in Hilchos Shabbos. Cord blood banking. Okay, the story, we're on the top of page 5. The story goes like this. The stem cells in the umbilical cord have not yet differentiated. They are what they call pluripotent. They can act in any part of the body. Many people like to save these stem cells because Lu Yitzuya, who knows what will come up later on with the baby in life, and maybe it could save the baby years down the road. We shouldn't need it, but if it does come up, it could be a great thing. Cord blood banking, when it's done in Israel, involves many potential Isurim Do'iraisa. You squeeze the cells, you squeeze blood out of the umbilical cord. That is a malacha of mefarik, which might be Do'iraisa. It might be Netilas Neshama. It might be an Isser of Dosh, according to the Rambam. There's a potential Isser Do'iraisa of squeezing it out. Then you put it into a plastic bag that contains some liquid. That is Tzoveya. You are dyeing that liquid with the blood cells. Then you tie a knot in the bag. That is the malacha of kosher. And then you send the bag to some company that stores it for you. So there are potential Isurim Do'oraisa in this case. The cord blood banking is not really for Pekuach Nefesh. All the Achronim base themselves on the Node of Yehuda that Pekuach Nefesh is only if I know someone is sick now. This situation, I'm worried about years and years. It should never come to it, but I'm worried that years and years down the road, I might need these stem cells. So the fact is that probably does not rise to the level of Pekuach Nefesh. Even so, most poskim do permit cord blood banking, even in Israel. For us in Chutz La'aretz, it's done with a non-Jew. And it certainly is a tzorech. Right? In Israel, you have Jewish doctors. If you have a Jewish person involved in the cord blood banking, then the same question that comes up in Israel applies here. But if it's a non-Jew, so it certainly is permitted. Again, whether or not you want to do it, it's something to think about, certainly. Yeah?
Would you be required to find out in that case?
If the doctor is Jewish? We can follow Rove. Even in New York, most doctors are non-Jewish. Your mother probably didn't think that, but most doctors are non-Jewish, yeah. Most nurses are non-Jewish. The people doing the malachas are probably non-Jews. In Israel, it's much more of a problem. Now, what we mentioned before in terms of making preparations for Shabbos delivery, the most important thing in terms of that is that you should fill out all forms in advance. Pre-registering in the hospital is a very, very important idea. It's a good idea even on a Tuesday, right? Even if you have a Tuesday baby, because it speeds up the whole process. But you should certainly pre-register for the hospital in the event of a Shabbos birth. Signing any document on Shabbos, obviously, is a Isur D'Oraisa. If you have to sign, you should tell them, let me sign after Shabbos. Again, I'm 4 out of 5 with babies born on Shabbos. Each time I told them that I would sign the insurance papers after Shabbos. They usually are okay with that. The one thing that people aren't always sensitive to is after the baby is born, they like to take fingerprints. They take like the baby's footprint and they put it on the paper, and they take the mother's fingerprint on the same paper, and it's like a cute thing. There's absolutely no medical reason to have that little paper with the fingerprints. It's a nice memento. It's an Isur D'Oraisa to have your fingerprint on Shabbos, no? Because each person's fingerprint is unique to them. It's a chasima more than any other chasima. So the fact is that fingerprinting on Shabbos should not be done. How did we do this? Yeah, so those 4 kids who... When we went into the hospital, 4 babies were born on Shabbos. Bruria was born on Bruria was born on Shabbos, but we went into the hospital on Friday afternoon. We sent the other kids to my in-laws, and we went into the hospital Friday afternoon, and she was born on Shabbos. So I told my wife then that what she should do is she should do the fingerprinting before Shabbos. So the doctor says, well, you know, we have one card is pink, one card is blue. Which one do you want? Like, is it going to be a boy or a girl? He's like, we don't know. So we did both. Okay, so this is a great scandal. And then we let them... So we did that all before Shabbos. The real issue that came up that time was candle lighting on Friday afternoon in the hospital. We brought a little incandescent bulb and we lit it in the labor room. Even though we knew that we wouldn't be spending that much time there, but we ate a Seudas Shabbos there while my wife was in labor. We had our challahs and we ate our Seudas Shabbos with that little candlelight, and we just donated that incandescent nightlight to the hospital. I guess they kept it or something as a souvenir. I don't know exactly what it is, but then you move to the delivery room and etc. Fine. Are there any issues that we did not cover in terms of Shabbos birth that we should cover? Is it? Yeah.
Let's say the baby's born, like, you know, 10 minutes after Shabbos starts, so the hospital's going to want to run all those, like, you know, hearing tests, all those things.
So the hospital is non-Jewish.
They
can do whatever they want. The one thing to be concerned about with the little babies, the way they tell you to diaper the babies, actually, right after they're born, is that you take a cloth and you moisten the cloth and... What? It's called mercunia? What's that? It's not... What? Yeah, right. That's what it's called. There's an Isser D'oraisa to wet a cloth on Shabbos. That's an Isser of Malavein. So you should try to find some creative way to diaper the baby without wetting the cloth, or you ask a nurse to do it for you. That issue, I remember, came up. What other issues? I don't know. Yeah. Yes. In other words, it's best if you're in labor on Shabbos, can you take a hot shower in labor? Absolutely. Remember, you are a cholashi yish bo sakana at that point. If it will relax you, you can turn on the lights for you. You can take a hot shower. It's best to do it out ayde a non-Jew. Ask the nurse to turn on the water for you before you go into the shower, if possible. We've done it.
Yeah. Technically, if they recommend washing the baby that way, you can do it
because
the baby is also considered.
The baby is considered choshi yesh bo sakana, but that's not necessary for the baby's health by any standard, right? That is cleanliness. The baby can become less clean, right? So it's not really for the baby's health in any sort of way, as opposed to a woman in labor. So we assume that whatever will relax her can have health benefits. That's the basic assumption. Yeah.
Do these things differ between like early labor versus later labor, or where did this?
Okay. Oh, we didn't talk about that. At what point in labor do you go to the hospital? Thank you. So I have that on the sheet somewhere, top of page 3. When to call the doctor. Now we're going to see in a few minutes that you are only a full-fledged Yoledes in terms of Hilchos Nida when it's pretty late in the process. But you don't call the doctor when you are late in the process. Usually they recommend calling the doctor, and the Mishnah Berurah points this out, right, that these things that you can do without any delay, so then you delay it. But when it comes Avo Le'inyan, Kriyas Chachoma, but to call the doctor, to call the midwife who comes from a far place, so if you're going to wait until the simanim that we'll discuss in 3 minutes, it will be too late. So therefore, you go to the hospital earlier. At what point do you go to the hospital? Usually for the first babies, they say when contractions are coming consistently 20 minutes apart, you call the doctor. And the doctor will advise you when to come in. Later babies, so they say at around 6 minutes apart, 6 or 8 minutes apart, you should start the process. That's when you should call the doc. That's when you should call the doctor, and the doctor will tell you come into the hospital, not come into the hospital, etc. That Yom Kippur night when Yosef Dov was born, we probably made 10 phone calls to the doctor. That's the standard thing, right? You make phone calls, you call the doctor. The doctor says, you know what? Doesn't seem like anything is really happening yet. You know, and then I came to shul Yom Kippur morning because. Like, things aren't happening yet, right? And Dominic started at 8, and I was out of here by 8:30. I got my day off, yeah.
What about leaving the hospital? Like, they're ready to kick you out on time.
So in the New York area, they will not kick you out on Shabbos. If they want to, you say, I am an Orthodox Jew and I just can't leave, they will not kick you out on Shabbos. They will never kick you out less than 24 hours anyway. The issue comes up on like 3-day yontivs and stuff. In the New York area, they will not kick you out of the hospital. There's always an exception, but that is the standard thing. By the way, they give you little wrist bracelets, no? After the baby is born. Are you allowed to walk with those things outside? This is really more relevant for the husband than for the wife. Are you allowed to walk outside when there's no air with that wrist bracelet? I thought you can. I thought that's really a tachshit. Because everyone goes and they shows it. Look at that, right? Had a baby, like everyone like shows off. So a tachshit, there's no issue of hotzah. It's not considered carrying to walk outside with that when there's no eruv. Inside the hospital, it is better to take elevators rather than trying to take stairs. The stairs generally have alarms at the end of them, and any malacha that you think you're avoiding by taking the stairs, you end up violating at the bottom. You take an elevator, you ask a non-Jew to push the button for you. Again, if I want to go to shul, I could ask a non-Jew to push the button for me because I'm going for a mitzvah. I come back, I'm going to do a mitzvah biker cholim to visit my wife, to visit my new baby. So I'm also allowed to ask a non-Jew to push the button for me. I think that's fine. Anything else that we have not yet covered in Shabbos, or should we just briefly move on to the Nida issues? Okay, there is a discussion in Poskim as to whether the page 5 at the top, there's a discussion in Poskim whether the husband should be present in the labor and delivery room. At some point in the process that we'll discuss in a minute, the wife becomes a nida during the delivery. Can the husband be there when she's a nida? Again, you're not supposed to look at the generally covered parts of your wife's body while she is a nida. You should not look at those parts. Obviously, when you're having a baby, that's not feasible. The Minchas Yitzchak, for that reason, feels that husbands should not be present in the delivery room. Reb Moshe Feinstein basically disagrees. Reb Moshe says that she should be present in the she can be present. He has no hesitations about saying that he can be present in the delivery room. Rav Moshe writes that he could help her, he could strengthen her, give her courage, give her encouragement. So therefore, I think the standard practice, even though when I remember Rav Meir Tversky one time leaving the Beis Medrash during Second Seder to call his wife to wish her mazel tov on having a baby. But that is not typical. We generally, husbands should be present, and they should. Now, as a general rule, they tell you in the childbirth classes that you reach a certain point during labor that there's nothing that anyone can say that will make you calm. That is the reality. Husbands should realize that you're there, you're trying to encourage, and it's nifla'o sabore to be present when the baby is born. Again, you have to be careful not to look where you're not allowed to look, but at the same time, it's an unbelievable experience. It is nifla'o sabore. It's something that you really want to be part of. I don't think it's necessary to belabor this point here. I think most people understand that the husband should be there during labor and delivery. However, we assume that holding hands, touching, is forbidden at that point, because once she becomes a nida, the regular rules of nida apply. There was a Rav, Rav Duchovsky, who came up with some kulos. He felt that maybe there's no iser of negiya in the process of labor because it's not considered derechiba, it's there only to encourage, and it's not in the loving sort of way, and it won't lead to bia at all. The poskim summarily dismissed his arguments. It's really the Minchas Yitzchak has a Chuvan Chelakei, and everyone dismissed his arguments. It was like a back and forth in the Truman Journal years ago. Everyone assumes that it's really usher to hold hands and the like once Nida sets in during the labor process. Yeah.
Why wouldn't that fall into the same category as being Chalashadis?
So the basic idea is that if there's no one else who can do it, remember, it's Kamed Eshel Shnei Mishaninon. Additionally, we're dealing with an issue that's potentially Yahari Val Yavar. That's why it's more strict. You're right. Obviously, if the only one there to deliver the baby is the husband, go for it. You hope he knows what he's doing. But at the same time, the poskim assume that it's really a problem. This additional encouragement from holding hands or something, that type of yesuve daita, because we're dealing with a potential yaharig val yavar, we won't go to that far. That's the way the poskim weigh this issue. But that's a very good question, though. Yeah, Yitzi?
And additional harchakos
So, again, the harchakos apply to the same extent that harchakos apply when your wife is sick. The achronim, say if your wife is sick, so in terms of the harchakos, we try to be mema'it as much as possible. But in terms of, like, if she needs a cup to hand a cup to her, the equivalent, hoshata miyad liyad, so that I think, if there's no one else who could do it for you, that is going to be permitted. That those harchakos certainly do not apply in these situations. Those harchakos that have more chiba involved in them might apply in terms of making, it's not realistic, in terms of making a bed and giving, Mezigas hakos and sending a kol shel bracha, these things don't really come up. Yeah. Fine.
Yeah.
If you're at a stage that she's able to listen to Kiddush, you could do it the norm.
All right.
It's really, those issues generally do not come up. Fine. At what point does Nida set in? So the Gemara in Shabbos, in the context of being Mechal on Shabbos, the Gemara says, Me'imas ha'psichas ha'kever. So Abaye says, Mishosha teshev al ha'mashber, from the time that she sits on the birthing stool. Now, sitting on the birthing stool, Rav Moshe understands, means when the doctor puts you in bed to labor. If you use a doctor, that is very early in the process. If you use a midwife, they want you to do much of your labor while you're standing and walking around and relaxing. They don't want you in bed. Doctors, for their own reasons, want you to labor in bed. So Rav Moshe assumes that Teshev al Hamashber means when you go onto bed. That could be very early if you're using a doctor. My impression is that it doesn't mean that. It means that if you'd be using a midwife at the point that you'd sit on the birthing stool, which is very late in the process. The midwives actually have a birthing stool there, and they tell you at some point, use it, or you know that you want to use it. That's very, very late in the process. That's Teshev al Hamashber. That's opinion one in the Gemara. Rav Huna Breid Rav Yehoshua says, Mishashadam Shoses V'yored, from the time that the blood is flowing. That is also pretty late in the process. These are all different stages of active labor. Amrila Mishasha Chaverosel Nosososa Bagafeha, that's the time that she cannot walk on her own. But when you're incapable of walking on your own, or the blood is flowing, or you are sitting on the birthing stool, the Gemara says, at that point, we are Mechal al Shabbos for you. The Gemara is on Mechal al Shabbos. The Gemara is not talking about Nida. There's a discussion in the Achronim, the Tshuva of the Nachlas Shiva. The Nachlas Shiva was a student of the Taz. The Nachlas Shiva felt, it's referred to in the Pesach Tshuva, which is the next source, page 5, going over to page 6. The Nachlas Shiva felt that for Chilo Shabbos, we assume that any one of the three is enough that we are Mechal Shabbos. For Hilchos Nida, he says, we're going to be more Machmir than Chilo Shabbos even. And you're a Nida even before these stages. That's what the Nachlas Shiva assumes. Most assume that, if anything, Chilo Shabbos is more Mekel than Nida because of the rules of Safek Nefashos L'Hakel. So whenever there's a chance whatsoever that there's pekuach nefesh at stake, will be Mechal Shabbos, but Nida sets in later. Generally speaking, we follow the second opinion, which means that all things considered equal, you are not going to be a Nida until one of these three stages happens. Now, that means, effectively, that when you're bleeding, there is Nida. There is something called the bloody show, which is technically a mucus plug. The mucus plug is a cervical plug. It is not uterine blood at all. It does not create nida, according to almost all poskim. If you want the sources on that, so in the Rabbi Sabalovsky Hilchos Nida book that was published by YU, he has sources on that. There's a Sefer Pischei Tshuva Nida, he quotes it. Even Rabbi Yoshev was make on this. We assume that the cervical plug does not create nida. When the water breaks, does that create nida? Huge discussion in the poskim. Some distinguish if there a lot of water or a little bit of water. Some say that when the water breaks, you should do a bedika to see if you bled already. I strongly recommend not doing a bedika at that point. You do not want to insert anything. There is potential infection. Do not do a bedika at that point. Most achronim feel that water breaking alone does not create nida. However, if water breaks and there is a chance that what came out is also uterine blood, if there's also blood in it, at that point you become a nida. Someone called me a few weeks ago, the water broke and there was some blood in the water, and the blood was not from the mucus plug, it was potentially uterine blood. In that case, you do become a nida. Now, for our purposes, the stages that are mentioned in the Gemara are very late. We generally assume that there is nida potentially earlier on by what we call psichas hakever, which is at the time that certainly active labor begins. You have passed that. Active labor means pushing. Okay, for our purposes. I know that they have, what, the three stages of labor, what they teach in childbirth classes now, right? But active labor is pushing. Generally speaking, once the contractions are 3 minutes apart, so then we assume that you are a nida. That is a rule of thumb that they quote in the name of Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Again, how he got this, we don't know. We don't know. Reb David Lifshitz used to say 7 minutes apart. That's what Rabbi Neuberger tells people. That's very early, no? 7 minutes apart, like nothing started. Now, if we're not working with contractions, if we are working with dilation, so when dilation is at 3 centimeters, so then some assume it's nida. It's very hard to know. Some women dilate the entire 9th month. They are dilated to that extent. Really, what we're talking about is dilation because of labor. The basic rule over here, we are not sure. We are not sure at what point in the process you become a nida. We're trying to approximate active labor as the guidelines, and we're trying to use some measurement of contractions in terms of how it equals active labor. You never know until, right, the chart has finished, and then you look backwards when active labor actually began. We just don't know. The 3-minute guide is used by many people. Again, we can't say definitively that that's what it is, but that is what many poskim recommend. This is a very hard issue to define. Am I a nida? Am I not a nida at this stage? In many cases, again, there was blood earlier on, and then, of course, you're a nida. If there wasn't blood, so then we have to deal with these issues. The Gemara says that with a cesarean section, you are not a nida. The reality today is that with a C-section, you are a nida. There's always vaginal bleeding with a C-section. Always. What other issues should we... Stripping of the membranes, most poskim feel does create nida. Basically, stripping of the membranes means that the doctor goes inside and removes, scrapes away from the uterine wall. That can create nida, or at least we're worried that with some of the damaka that came out, there's additional dam nida that came out with it. Stripping of the membranes we do consider to be nida. An ordinary examination does not make you a nida. when the doctor examines you to find out just how much you are dilated, that does not render you nida. That's not considered psichas hamakar, mibachutz, etc. There is a huge discussion in poskim in cases of false labor, whether you are in nida or not. If you sat down on the birthing stool and then you got up and you walked away, generally speaking, the issue doesn't come up. If it does come up, you don't become a nida, for one of two reasons, and Rav Moshe in the Tshuva tries to give a number of nafgaminas between those two reasons. That is the issue in terms of Hilchos Nida and how it's relevant. Did we miss anything in this segment? Miriam, anything to add?
Nothing that I remember.
What?
Nothing I remember.
Nothing you remember. Okay.
Well, like, what did they do 100, 200 years ago in terms of determining...
Yashval Hama, it was much easier then.
Because
they had midwives, and you sit down on the birthing stool, or you can't walk, then you're a nida. Shine. Right? If we assume that the same things that are found in Hilchos Shabbos apply to Hilchos Nida, very easy. Okay. Very briefly, we'll just talk for 2 minutes about nursing on Shabbos. Okay, so nursing is permitted. What about if the baby is not yet taking from the breast? Can you express milk? Can you pump and save that milk and give it to the baby later? So that is a potential issur d'oraisa of mefarik on Shabbos. Basically, you are removing a liquid. You're creating a liquid from what would be not liquid beforehand. That is an issur d'oraisa of mefarik on Shabbos. If a person if the baby is only taking milk from the mother, and the baby cannot, for whatever the reason, the baby cannot take any formula because the baby has some allergy or the like, so of course you nurse on Shabbos or you express milk and you give the baby that milk. Not a problem whatsoever. If, however, the baby does take any formula, so then you should not express milk and save that milk to give it to the baby on Shabbos. That's a potential issur d'oraisa. If you express milk and the milk is holich le'ibud, so that is not an issur d'oraisa. And that's an issur d'rabbanan. We permit the issur d'rabbanan in cases of tsar. For many women, they feel engorged, it's uncomfortable. So to express milk and have it be holich le'ibud, have the milk go down the sink, that certainly is going to be permitted in cases of loss. Now, this is very hard for people, no? Like, milk is like liquid gold. And to say that the only way you could express milk on Shabbos, you can't save it up at all. Right? So I could express milk and put it in a bottle, and there is some detergent in the bottle, so it doesn't really become a usable liquid. That's a bad idea. What happens if you end up using the bottle? You're giving the baby detergent. That's a very bad idea. Many Achronim say that's what you should do, or you should express milk directly in the sink. It's very hard. You're wasting what is liquid gold, and that's true, but at the same time, we're dealing with potentially an issur d'oraisa. If I express milk and I save that milk, that is mefarik min hatorah. That's an issur d'oraisa, which I can't permit. I can't permit that issur d'oraisa unless it's a possible pikuach nefesh situation for the baby. So that's very, very difficult. That's very, very difficult. Most poskim in YU are more mekel than the poskim in these svarim. In these books, they say that you have to fill up the bottles with detergent so that it doesn't become usable milk at all. Rabbi Sabalovsky and Rabbi Simon, they all recommend not doing that. What you do is you express milk, you pump, and then you just immediately pour it down the sink. Again, it's painful, it's difficult, I understand it, but I think that's the halacha, that's what you have to do. In terms of turning an electric pump on Shabbos, again, if you have a non-Jew who could do it for you, if there's someone at home, great. If not, we assume that Metzorcha Chol Hashem B'Sakon, you could turn on an electric appliance with a shinui. So you turn it on with your elbow, with your foot. It could be a little complicated, you have to be creative, but that is doable. The best thing to do is to have a Shabbos clock and to have your pump attached to a Shabbos clock. You should attach you should attach it to your breasts before the pump actually goes on. Because if you attach it while it's going on, potentially that act of attaching itself might be the issur d'oraisa of being mefarik. So we want to have some delay. So if you could attach it to your breast before it goes on, and that would be the best situation. But again, saving the milk on Shabbos is really an issur d'oraisa. I give you all the sources here in this section that's called nursing issues. In the section that's called bracha issues, so we discuss the question that technically in Shulchan Aruch it says that when the boy is born, you make a hatova hametiv. When the girl is born, you make a it doesn't say you make any bracha. The Mishnah Berurah says you make a shachiyana because it's no worse than seeing a long lost friend who you've never seen before and you're happy to see them, so you make a shachiyana when you see this friend for the first time, long time. Reb Shlomo Zalman Arbach says that unlike your friend that you know what they look like, all babies look the same. That's what Shlomo Zalman argues. Therefore, you do not make a shechiyanu on your daughter. I have to admit that there are grounds in halacha to make a hatova meitiv both on the boy and on the girl. The Bir Halacha at the bottom of page 6 basically says that he entertains the idea that perhaps, again, it's not definitive, Bir Halacha entertains the idea that if someone had many sons and he was desiring a daughter and finally he got a daughter, so perhaps he may got tova ametiv in that situation as well. Again, if a person, that opens the door. I don't think it's Reform Judaism to make a hatova ametiv on the birth of a daughter. We'll leave it like that. So I thank you all very much for coming. If there's any questions, I will take them now. Miriam? Fasting, you don't fast when you are pregnant, with the exception of Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av, but Tisha B'Av is much more lenient than Yom Kippur. There are some communities, I have a sister-in-law whose husband is in Chaim Berlin, and she fasts all the fast days, which is a simple reading of the Rambam and Shulchan Aruch. We don't do that. We follow true of the Maharsham. We do not fast when we are pregnant. When you are, if it's on a Yom Kippur or a Tisha B'Av and you have to eat Shi'urim, so that's a whole other question that we should discuss some other time. Any other questions? Yeah. So, again, staining generally won't create nida, but the plug is a lot of blood. The bloody shul is a lot of blood. They know what it is. The doctor would tell you, oh, that was a mucus plug. If the doctor tells you that was the mucus plug, that is not nida. The doctor is identifying for you. It's not nida. Okay, we trust doctors. Yeah, Aliza?
So, in terms of the answer that you gave, that the husband should be in the room.
Yeah.
Is the woman, should the woman make sure to be covered in a certain way, or we just assume
as much as possible? Yes, you reach a certain point, it's impossible. You also reach a certain point that you're totally not cognizant of what's going on. You just want that baby out. That point comes, and okay. That point comes, but again, as much as possible, you should try always to be as tzanua as possible.
Other things you mentioned were the assumption that doctors are not Jewish and stuff. What if you know your doctor is Jewish?
So then you don't have all those kulas, right? But very often the doctor isn't the one doing any of the malacha. It's the nurses who are doing stuff. The nurse is taking the baby and turning that heater on for the baby. That's an issur d'oraisa. It's heat. Right? Heat is an issur d'oraisa. Okay, but it's a guy doing it. Also, we should point out that any staining during pregnancy is potential pekuach nefesh for the baby, and you go to the hospital on Shabbos right away. It happens sometimes I wake up very early Shabbos morning to learn. So last year, one Shabbos, I woke up at 4 a.m. to learn, whatever it was. And at 4:30, someone knocked on my door. It was someone in our building whose wife was staining during a stage of pregnancy. It was siyata d'shmaya. I was I was learning then. I said, go to the hospital right now. You should not ask those shilas. You just go. We paskin, it's a machlokas harishona, but we paskin that pekuach nefesh for the baby is also pekuach nefesh. No questions asked. What have we not covered? Yeah, Anat.
In terms of, let's say, hospital asking for written consent to do some kind of procedure.
Like if you want an epidural, you have to sign.
Yeah, so you can, in many cases, when you pre-register, you can sign those forms also. And you should do that. You should pre-register as much as possible. Again, anything that wasn't done beforehand, if you need it, you do it. It's better to do ayudei shinui. The Torah Hayoledah says try to sign with your left hand instead of your right hand if you're ordinarily a righty. I don't. Again, if you need to do it, you do it. But in most cases, it can be done in advance. What else?
Is it better to just scribble?
So again, if it will pass, if you end up not getting billed from insurance because of that, that's great. But okay, Mark.
Can the husband accompany the wife on Shabbos back home from the hospital?
So Rav Schechter's make on that, in Rabbi Jachter's, I think volume 2 of Grey Matter, he quotes this Pesach of Rav Schechter, that let's say you go to the hospital on Shabbos and they say, go back home, nothing's happening yet. So the wife is still Cholosh Eimbol Sakana, right? For her, Amir Lanachri is permitted. Rav Schechter says, once you're doing Amir Lanachri for her, you could get in the car with her also and go home.
Should we be taking enough money
for
a round trip?
So that usually you don't expect someone to be sent home. You should not take enough money for a round trip. I don't think it's necessary. Most cab companies, what would be a major thing for the community is to have one cab company who does business with all of us, and they know that we'll incentivize them for these Shabbos things and paying them after Shabbos. If there's anyone here who speaks enough Spanish to properly negotiate with the cab companies, it would be a major benefit for the community. Some communities have that. For some reason, we don't have that yet in the Heights.
Yeah. I was also thinking if the birthday, let's say it's a 3-day yontov, for whatever reason, after the baby is born, the child and the mother are sent home. Can the father?
Again, it could be that the mother, if.
Is there still a.
Yeah. You're certainly a Cholosh Eimbol Sakana. You might be even a Cholosh Yishbol Sakana, depending how many days, 3 days, maybe twice, whatever it is. Yeah, it could still be Cholosh Yishbol Sakana in that situation. Okay. Okay, I thank you for coming. Just let me turn off the machine. I have one last question.